Chapter 9. Beneath the Undertow. All was darkness when she opened her eyes. Pitch black, cold and deep and complete. For a moment, Diul's heart was sent galloping with fear, and she snaked upright, clawing at the floor beneath her. But she felt the hard stone under her hands then, smelled the mould and rot and rust around her, and her hands curled into helpless fists. And then, screaming, "Aaron," she whispered. Diul dragged herself to her feet, grasping the bars in the door slot. Dim light shone from the stairwell, the cries echoing on chill black stone, all the way down her spine. "Aaron!" She stood on tiptoe, shouting to be heard over his cries. "Aaron!" The screaming stilled, a muffled gasp, a heart-sick groan. And then came a tiny whisper, so racked with misery and pain that tears filled her eyes.
"Dior,
it's me," she nodded, squeezing the bars. "I'm here, Aaron. You're not alone." He had no need to breathe, the doors of life now closed to him forever. But still, we heard the brave Lord of Avalane inhale as if to ready himself.
"Where is here?"
"The dungeons under Dunmere again. They locked us in last night. Lily and
Nikita."
Aaron breathed. We heard him moan then, the sound of something dull and heavy thumping against the stone over and over. His skull, we realized.
"Oh, Aaron,"
Diul sighed.
"It hurts, Diul. Almighty God in heaven, it burns.
"I'm sorry," she whispered, anguished. "I'm sorry. What can I do?"
"Talk to me,"
he begged.
"Tell me how you came to be here."
"Kiara and Kane caught me in the mountains, brought me here in the convoy from Avalane with the others. Baptiste was in the cage with me." "He's alive, and he's safe. Safe as he can be in this accursed city, anyway. They lost their last blacksmith, they said. They need him to work." We heard Aaron whisper thanks to God, and as we crawled down Dior's arm to rest upon her hand, we found ourselves marvelling that one who had suffered so much could still thank his Maker for so small a blessing. So different to our faithless brother, this one. So near, yet so far away. A tiny kinship, we felt then, for this fallen son of Avalane, this martyr yet walking. He was but new to the blood, the tattered remnants of his humanity unshed, his mortal ties yet unbroken. But sitting upon Dior's knuckles, wings fluttering in the dungeon air, we could smell the faint tang of burning flesh, hear the soft sizzle of silver chains on his skin. We remembered the sight of him drinking from that dark prince's wrist just the night before, and we knew he was as damned as we were.
"And Gabriel," he whispered, "where is he?"
"I don't know."
Dior shook her head, glancing now toward us. And perhaps it was imagination, or a simple trick of the light, but I swear we saw a glint of suspicion in her eye. The lips she licked at, still stained with Lily's blood.
"I don't even know if he's alive," she said.
"If he is, he will come for you."
The Grail drew a deep breath, looked around her dank cell, the cold stone and hard iron and dim, flickering light.
"I'm not sure we can count on Gabe, Aaron."
"You can. You should. I have known Gabriel de Leon since I was a boy, Dior. He is no saint, believe me.
The Capitaine of Avalane chuckled, drew a trembling breath.
But he does not abandon those he loves, and he loves you, doubt it not.
Maybe, but I'm not waiting for Gabriel. I've escaped darker holes than this, and I'll figure out a way to free us both.
No,
he hissed.
No. Tell me nothing, Cherie. If you do discover a way to freedom, I pray God you get my Baptiste to safety. But breathe no word of it to me. For when the Black Heart binds me with his blood, he may command me to tell all I know of you.
Her pulse thumped harder, the scent of sour sweat moistening her skin. They're binding me, too, she said. They forced me to show them what my blood can do. Then Lily, she forced me to drink. We heard a sigh then, thick with sorrow.
God help you, child.
Maybe we can fight it, she hissed, defiant. Gabe said it was like love. I've been in love before, but I was still me. I wouldn't ever...
It is no mortal love, Cherie. That corruption in their veins, it is a dark counterfeit, bereft of truth, but no less potent for its lack. It is a cruel love they bestow, Dior. An envious, possessive love, dragging all sweetness and honesty beneath its undertow. I have seen it make wives kill their husbands with a smile, parents butcher their children in defiance of all God and nature's law. It is a love hell-born.
There must be some way to break it.
If the one you are bound to is slain, that will end the spell. And even if they live, after a time spent without drinking, the bond will fade. Not years, mind you, but decades. But other than that...
Aaron's voice came easier now, as if he almost had a grip on his agony. Yet between each trembling breath, we could still smell the burning on his skin.
I gave up all I had to be with my Baptiste. All I'd worked for, my future, my place in the Silver Order, ma famille. I turned my back on all of it, and felt not one drop of regret. Such is the love I bear him, have always borne him, my beautiful man.
He sighed like a little boy lost in the dark.
But 2 nights from now, when the blood of that devil touches my tongue for the 3rd time, I will be his. And should he command it, I would cut my beloved's throat in a blinking and try not to get any on my boots. That is the depth of it, Dior. That is the horror. 3 nights is all it takes to forge a forever hell.
You wouldn't do that. Dior shook her head. I don't believe it. I've seen the way you two look at each other, heard the way he speaks of you and you of him. You love him.
I do,
he breathed.
But love is mortal. Blood is eternal.
She opened her mouth to protest, to defy, but footsteps on the stair stilled her tongue, and as I crawled swift back up her sleeve, she shrank away from the door, jaw clenched tight. Her heart was all agallop, heat rising on her body as the feet stopped outside. The lock clicked. She balled her fists, ready to fight. But when the door creaked open, a young woman waited on the other side.
The Contessa Divock commands you follow me.
Dior blinked, unknotting belly and hands. She would have recognized the maid, of course, despite the lack of knife wounds in her chest. Her hair was still the color of fire in summertime, her scowling, mismatched eyes fixed on Dior's.
The Contessa does not abide waiting,
Worm snapped.
Come, now.
The maidservant walked brisk toward the stair, Dior following with clear reluctance. Aaron whispered a prayer,
Almighty go with you, child.
She was led up the dungeon stairs, past a desk where sat a heavy-set man with close-cropped hair and hawkish eyes, wreathed in taproot smoke. The jailer returned Worm's nod, and with a covetous glance at his cigarel, Dior followed into a corridor beyond. Night was fallen outside, the mighty keep lit by chemical lights. Leeches would allow few flames in their havens, after all. The dun was busy, soldiers and servants rushing, the sound of steel and heavy boots ringing in the courtyard outside, hundreds of crows calling in the black heavens above it all. Dior followed on the maidservant's heels into the dun proper, dark stone around her, long woven rugs beneath her feet. We were perched at the line of her jaw now, pressed flat to her thumping pulse, watching from beneath her tangle of pale hair. We were afeared at all this, and clearly so was she. But our search for Mother Marin had so far proved fruitless, and we were still helpless, forced to bear mute witness and beat our small wings against Dior's skin every so often, simply to remind her she was not alone. Despite the cracks in the walls left from the Divok attack, the opulence of this place was breathtaking. High ceilings and stained glass and decor fit for royalty. We entered a great hall with far-flung rafters wrought with evernots, the walls lined with beautiful suits of plate armor and weaponry. Grand green tapestries embroidered with wolves hung beside portraits of proud women, the brows graced with circlets of gold. They were attired as high-born ladies, save they often wore breastplates of steel and carried swords, and men dressed in noble cloth stood at their right hands.
"The Hall of Crowns,"
Worm murmured by way of explanation. These were laird ladies, we realised, the women who'd ruled this dun and clan in years past. Centuries after it had been brought into the fold of the one faith, Oswey was still a matriarchal nation at heart, venerating the feminine, the life-giver, the wellspring. The Ossian interpretation of the one faith centred the Mother Maid, not the Almighty, a bastardized holdover from pagan days when these folk spilled the blood of enemies on altars devoted to the Mother Moons. And though this country had sworn fealty to the Augustan dynasty, in truth, it had not been ruled by the emperor, but a conquering queen. In the nights before the Divok came, at any rate. Dior looked at her statue now, looming before the twin arches of a stair winding up from the Hall of Crowns. A young woman, fierce as lions, clad in plate mail and clan cloth, a long blade held in one raised fist. The statue was granite, but the sword itself was real, the actual blade she'd forged from the melted weapons of her vanquished foes. "Nive Amergen," Dior read on the plaque. "The Nine Swords."
"Do not tarry,"
the maidservant snapped, glancing over her shoulder.
"There is but one lady of this realm now, and her name be not Amergen. And should you leave her waiting, your life shall pay the forfeit of her patience."
Dior looked the maid over, lips pursed. She was 19 at a guess, and we'd have marked her Ossian by her freckled skin and fiery hair. But she spoke with an accent as mismatched as her eyes, half Eledeni by the sound, only a hint of Oswey in her vowels.
"What's your name?" Dior asked.
"The Contessa Divok calls me Worm."
"But what's your name?"
The girl blinked at Dior and replied as if she were an imbecile.
"Worm."
Turning on her heel, she strode up the stair, down a long corridor lined with more armour, thrall swords at guard. They came to double doors embossed with the wolf and swords of the Mergen clan, a river running beneath. And as the girl called Worm pushed them open, Dior looked dizzied by a perfume near forgot. A bathhouse, we realised, hung thick with steam. A large copper tub sat at its heart, the water already drawn. There was little in the way of flowers in the Empire anymore, but what could be done to sweeten the air clearly had been. Garlands of fool's honey hung on the walls, and sticks of wood ash smouldered in golden bowls.
Undress, Worm commanded.
Dior blinked. Most folk offer a drink first.
I am to make you presentable for your audience, Worm snapped. If I fail, the Contessa will be displeased, and you may not be there to mend the stab wounds next time.
Dior swallowed hard. I'm sorry. If I'd have known what she was like...
I've no need of your apology, blood witch.
Worm glowered. Well, I'm giving it all the same, Dior replied, jaw squared. You were hurt on my account, and I'm sorry for it. And I'm no witch either, by the way. I'm not like them.
I know sorcery when I see it, Worm replied, looking Dior up and down, and deceit when I hear it. But if you truly make amends, do as I say and get undressed.
Worm busied herself at a cupboard, while Dior stood in the bathhouse's heart, motionless and mute. After Lily's declaration yestereve, the maidservant was obviously aware that Dior was a girl, but the Grail's pulse was still thumping with uncertainty, and her skin was clammy cold. After so long pretending to be something else, she was clearly frightened to be unveiled as she truly was. With Worm's back turned, we fluttered free from Dior's hair, hiding among the shadows of the rafters above. Turning away from the other girl, Dior discarded her travel-worn clothes with clear reluctance, glancing over her shoulder to ensure Worm wasn't watching. Her trembling fingers traced a small bulge hidden in her hemline. Gabriel's phial was still secreted under the stitching, and to abandon her frock coat was to abandon her last link to him. But aside from swallowing it, or solutions more unsavoury, she'd nowhere else to hide it, and, in truth, none of us had any idea if he was even alive. And so, dropping the coat and stripping off the last of her underthings, Dior slipped quickly into the water. Despite her unease, a smile curled her lips as she lowered herself into that warmth, a blissful sigh slipping her lungs. 7 martyrs. I can't remember the last. Her words were drowned by a bucketful of water dumped over her head without ceremony. As Dior sputtered, Worm tipped a ladleful of viscous sludge onto her hair. Soap, apparently, the tang of ash and quicklime sweetened by more fool's honey. The maidservant was ungentle, scrubbing hard enough to bring tears to Dior's eyes, but the Grail tried to hold herself still, arms folded to protect her modesty, eyes shut against the sting. It wasn't until Worm lifted a horsehair brush that Dior finally objected, trying to twist free of the grip that closed about her wrist. But like Joaquin, the maidservant was blessed with a thrall's terrible strength, and Dior's arm was hauled skyward, Worm scrubbing her armpits and chest with no regard for the younger girl's bashfulness.
What is your name? Worm demanded.
Dior yelped as the maid hauled one leg from the water and began scrubbing. Worm looked up briefly, her eyes glittering. They were peculiar, to be sure. One bright blue like the skies in old paintings, the other the green of long-gone leaves. Old folklore in Lawson had it that folk afflicted such like were cursed with ill fortune. that such a mark told of an ancestor who'd had truck with the Fae. But we noted that the Grail was staring at them. "Dior," she replied, squirming with discomfort as the scrub brush crept higher.
"Where are you from?"
"Sedeum, a city called La—"
"I did not ask where you were born,"
the Failing snapped, dropping her foot.
"I asked where you were from. Who were your family? Of what stock were your kin?"
"I never met my papa,"
the Grail shrugged, matter of fact. "He was a wanderer, from what Mama told me. I don't even know his name. Mama was from Elidane, originally. She was a, well, the polite phrase is courtesan, though she never visited court in her life."
"Well, you are in a court now, by God,"
the maid replied, grabbing her other foot.
"A court of the blood. And if you do not comport yourself with due dignity—"
The doors slammed open, and Dior startled, water sloshing over the tub's lip. Standing on the bathhouse threshold, we saw a dark angel, carved by a devil's hand, her frail wings trembling with hunger at the mere sight of him.
"Count Nikita,"
Worm whispered, dropping to her knees.
The priori of the Blood Divok loomed at the entrance, gazing about the bathhouse with the voids that passed for his eyes. He was utterly naked, save for his necklace, strung with fangs and that gleaming golden vial. His every muscle was carved of alabaster, long hair spilling over his graven shoulders and chest like a black waterfall. He stood so still and silent, he might have passed as a sculpture on Genoa's dreadful bridge, save that he was covered, hands, chest, face, privates, in fresh blood.
"Night's blessings, sweetlings,"
he smiled, his voice deep as graves. Dior averted her gaze, looking anywhere but at that dark and bloody prince. As he watched from on high, she crossed her arms to cover her nakedness again, sinking as low in the bath as she could. Her heartbeat was so loud we could hear it, that dreadful tempo only doubling as the Count Divok walked across the boards before the prostrate maidservant, and without ado, climbed into the tub opposite Dior. The bath was an opulent affair, large enough for four. But the Grail flinched as Nikita reclined, staining those waters sticky red, his toes brushing light upon her thigh. The vampire said nothing, simply staring, black presence and leaden silence thickening in the air, until Dior at last was forced to raise fearful eyes to his.
"Mind me not,"
he smiled, waving one lazy hand.
"Be about thy business."
Dior was up and halfway out of the bath before his voice pinned her still.
"Hold, sweetling."
Save for the hammer blow of her heart, the girl froze. Slowly, she turned to the one they called Blackheart, sunk now in the water up to his chiseled chest. His face was yet spattered with blood, bright and gleaming. We wondered briefly who it belonged to.
"Thy hair,"
he pointed, fingernails long and sharp.
"'Tis yet unclean."
"Forgive me, Laird,"
Worm began, rising with ladle in hand.
"I was about—"
"No, no."
The monster's black gaze drank Dior in head to toe.
"Allow me."
Dior clenched her teeth to stop them chattering. "Most generous, Laird, but the—" Laughter cut her protest off, left her mute and trembling. From above, we watched Nikita shake with amusement, head thrown back, razors gleaming in his gums. There was a beauty to him, undeniable, no matter the heady peril of it. A youth in life's prime, pale and fey and shadow-born, preserved forever at that moment of a dark perfection.
"When Nikita asks,"
he said, smile dying on his lips,
"he is seldom asking."
Dior made no reply, bare and vulnerable, lowering her gaze once more. We saw horror dawn on her face as she realized he cast no reflection in the water they shared.
"Turn about,"
Nikita whispered, twirling one finger in the air. Dior glanced up to us, that bloody mote, helpless but to watch and seethe. She looked to Worm, who appeared near as terrified as she, but the maidservant met her eyes and nodded, almost imperceptible, lips pressed thin. And so Dior turned her back on that beast in the tub with her, arms still wrapped tight about herself, sinking back down into the steam. Nikita stirred behind her, rising, the troughs and valleys of his rock-hard belly now pressed against her spine. She shivered as he hooked one sharp fingernail beneath her chin, tilting her head back. And lifting the ladle, he lathered water gently through her ashen hair.
"Thou art a maid, as my sister speaketh,"
he murmured,
"and a winsome bud at that."
His eyes roamed her body, falling on the clothing she'd discarded.
"Why veil hind's splendour neath crude heart's cloth, and shackle such bounty neath tight-bound rags?"
Dior remained mute, flinching as he poured more water, his claws running soft through her hair. We knew a terrible strength was hid behind Nikita's touch, but only his smile betrayed the wickedness in his soul, his hands as gentle as a lover's own.
"My sweet sister would claim thee for her own, and I have given blessing. Nikita is priori, but Lily is eldest, and to keep the peace of his court, he must keep the heartless and her children pleased. Yet, the scent of thee."
He lowered his head now, wolfish, inhaling deep and sighing long.
"My headsman names thy blood a venom, yet thy perfume promises bliss. Might fire be found in but a single drop of thee? I wonder, pale poison, should I risk a taste?"
His lips brushed her neck as he whispered, and Dior trembled like a candle flame at his touch. His fingertips danced slow along her shoulders, lower now, diamond-hard nails skimming her prickling skin. The dark pull of him swelled at her back, dragging her in, bottomless and black. His fingertips danced down the arms she'd wrapped about her breasts, and the faintest prick of his fangs pressed upon her throat as his hands closed about her wrists, prying them away ever so slow and leaving her utterly bare. This was surely her nightmare, rage and pity filling us to the brim as we watched it unfold. The bitter irony of it all, to have hidden what she was all these years and be set upon the very second she let it be known. God, how we cursed our helplessness then. I looked down into her eyes, praying God she might endure this, might become the mountain I had learned to be. But that was to pray for a sun already risen. If she'd been but a maid, she'd surely have melted, sighing submission as countless others over countless years must have done. Yet she was no mere child, Dior Lachance.
She was a daughter of the Redeemer born, and far from sinking into the bleak promise of that black prince's arms, we saw her fists clench with fury at his unasked-for touch, at the notion of this leech gnawing at her throat. We knew what her holy blood would do to him, and we prayed she might beg him bite, let him burn. But we all of us knew that song would end badly, no matter its sweet beginnings. And so, iron-willed, she gritted her teeth instead.
Get your fucking hands off me!
Count Nikita, I beg forgiveness,
Worm blurted, wringing her hands.
But my beloved mistress bid me bring the girl with all speed. She will be displeased if I tarry.
The vampire glanced toward the maidservant, needle-sharp fangs yet poised at Dior's neck. An age passed, empty and breathless, the very air itself crackling with desire and danger. But in the end, the vampire's blood-stained lips curled in a small smile.
Far be it from us, little one, to keep our elder waiting.
Nikita held Dior pinioned a moment longer, breathing her in like a fiend at his wretched pipe. And then the Laird Divok released his grip and sank back slow into red water. Dior near flew out of the bath, Worm wrapping her in a linen towel with eyes downturned. Ushering the Grail from the room, the serving girl was stopped at the last by Nikita's voice.
Worm.
The maidservant paused, chest heaving.
Aye, lad.
Maid's cloth suits thee better than thy former attire. Ye serve thy new mistress well.
The vampire draped a steaming cloth over his face.
But forget not who is master here.
Aye, lad,
she breathed. With a swift curtsy and Dior on her arm, the maid fled the room.